It's our business or executive leadership feature, and today we speak to an accomplished academic who's dynamic in that she's also been exposed to corporate life as well. Her area of specialism includes marketing, branding, ethics and reputation management. I'm happy to introduce Nicola Klein. She's the Dean of the Gordon Institute of Business Science, also known as GIBS. Welcome, Nicola.
Nampo, it's lovely to be here this evening.
Super. So you've been running the show at GIBS since around April 2015, somewhere there. Has it been a wild ride? What do you feel you've achieved during your tenure so far?
Oh, yes, and not a lot for me personally because I work with an amazing team of people.
Yes.
I think it has been a wild ride as a personal learning journey. You don't grow up wanting to be a dean. It's not something that most people aspire to being. So when it lands and you suddenly go, ooh, I've got to look after the academic reputation of the school, but as well, GIBS has a remarkable degree of autonomy as a business school. So there's running your own profit and loss and balance sheet with the support of the university, but we run our own show. So from a wild ride perspective, part of it, I think, is for any leader, there's a transition that you make that says, well, now this sits with me. I think, though, also from an economic perspective and a social perspective, we've gone through this era of fees must fall, which affected business schools less, but certainly in terms of rethinking curricula, rethinking the Africanization of how we are teaching and really introspecting as part of a university. Mm. There's been that. And then, of course, as a business school, we're affected by what has played out in the economy. And that's been a remarkable time. There is certainly space for learning. So it's been an incredible time to be Dean of the Business School.
So you're a heavyweight academic, although I know you're very modest. You've been in this game for several years. And of course, you were deputy dean before being appointed full dean, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. You've written lots of academic papers for both local and international consumption and so on. Is the academic route the one you'd always mapped out for yourself from an early age? Because I see that you've also had quite a varied career experience.
Not at all. I just fell in love with academia. So I was invited to join Wits University, Department of Business Economics, as a junior lecturer. And then what always sits as I think in business is this little mantra that says, oh, those who can do, those who can't teach, those who can do. And so I thought I must go into industry. And I had one very good experience, which was with Investec, and I had one very bad experience, which was with a large retailer, who I think is much better today. But I felt utterly trapped in corporate. And the incredible thing about academia is this thing called academic freedom.
Yes.
That people don't tell you what you have to work on or what you have to research. What they care about is the fact that you're a good teacher and that you research according to a research narrative. So this incredible freedom as a young 20-year-old, 20-something-year-old, of going, I can think about what I want to, and I can sense make, and nobody's going, oh no, you're too junior to be thinking about these kinds of problems. So it's a remarkable path for somebody who's a little independent and wants to make their own sense of the world. I don't think when you go into academia you necessarily think about, and for me certainly I didn't think about becoming a full professor. I didn't really think about entering into academic leadership at all, but I just knew that it was my happy place. At the same time, it's been a wonderful privilege to have worked in industry.
Yes.
Because I think what we need to see in universities is this blend between, we need to be the space where theory meets practice.
Yes.
And what we can't afford to have in business schools is a dislocation between what is taught, and I think it's less about teaching, but more what is learnt in business schools and what practice needs. So that was invaluable.
So at a strategic level, just speaking to what you've just said, what is it that you do as the leadership to ensure that there's that intersection between theory and practice? Presumably you work a lot with corporates.
We do. So at GIBS, our focus is both on delivering academic programs, but whether it's a master's, whether it's a doctorate, the emphasis is on relevance to practice and trying to solve practical problems, but adopting theoretical lenses to do that. And then a lot of our work in executive education is with big corporates, or it's individuals coming on short learning courses. Mm. And they need a bang for their bucks coming out of that. So there are a couple of things. I think the first thing is that when we look to employ our faculty, it's very important for us that generally, every now and then we'll bring in a theoretical, a high-level individual, but by and large, we want faculty who have steered this balance between practice and theory. The other thing is working with clients. I was very fortunate in terms of when I joined Gibbs as both teacher and I was also program manager. That got me really close to working with our clients to understand the practical problems that they're facing. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's an enormous privilege when a client says, would you develop a customized program for us? Because as faculty, what I adored about playing that role was that I could actually get really close up to clients and go, well, what are the problems you're trying to solve for?
Yes.
What is it that we, what are the capabilities we need to build? How are you thinking about leadership? And how do we then intersect that with what we know from the world of academia? So it's both about having the faculty who have the skills and the curiosity, but also around clients who will work with you to co-create great programs.
Excellent. So in reading up about you, I was amazed to learn that even though you're running the nuts and bolts of the institution administratively and everything else, you still make time to lecture. I mean, that's great, but how do you get the balance right? And I suppose from a professional point of view, it helps you to keep connected with the issues.
I love this notion of balance because it suggests that you can micro-finesse what you're doing. Some years ago, I broke my foot and I had to do rehab on a Bosu ball. And that sense of sort of swinging wildly between a sense of stability and a sense of being out of control was something that sometimes reminded me of this fallacy of we can get a perfect life in balance. Mm. I think what we learn to do is to carve out in our different roles the things that we enjoy. And perhaps I should be clear, I don't carry anything close to the teaching load of our faculty. I'm enormously lucky to have taught for many years now a course on building brands on our MBA electives and to engage on some of our executive education programs. But I think the thing is that if you love what you do, you find that balance. It has been really difficult trying to carve out also a research agenda being dean as well. And some things have to give. But the beauty of being in academia is that if you get it right, the research feeds the teaching, which feeds the leadership. And so you get this virtuous cycle.
Yes.
Where balancing all of these things is great.
So your areas of specialism, as I mentioned, are very interesting indeed and quite topical for South Africa right now. You're focused on things like branding and reputation management, amongst others. We've had a lot of corporate scandals in recent years, some of which have cost shareholders and other stakeholders a lot. And then, of course, there's the phenomenon of state capture as well. One of the things you do is to consult with organizations. What are the basic tenets of avoiding corporate scandals altogether, do you think?
Let me say, as a dean, I'm not doing nearly as much consulting as I used to. In fact, I don't consult, but a lot of it is engaging with organizations around this. And I think, firstly, we need to differentiate between crisis management and what you do when you are exposed and how you manage that. And we've seen issues around organizations handling it really badly and handling it well. But the more important thing for me is how do we build more ethical organizations and what does that take? And that really has to start with leadership and a sense of purpose that can be imbued throughout the organization. The question is often not in strategy, what will we do? It's what will we say no to? And how do we build the moral muscle and practice that decision-making that enables us to make the decisions in the gray? Mm. You know, some of the state capture information that's coming out is so obviously wrong. And so corrupt, it really is just horrendous and horrible to start thinking about. But often the slide into unethical behavior starts with smaller decisions. It starts with letting something go. Mm. And so for organizational leaders who are prepared to stand up and say, we will not tolerate this, and act on the smaller infractions, I think that's what really starts building the muscle that makes it easier to say no to the big things. Hmm. And then recovery.
Yeah.
You know, if we look at what's playing out, for example, in EOH at the moment and the role that the new CEO has to play, where it's not the corruption has not been rampant across EOH, but how that contaminates an organization and when you find it, how do you deal with it? Mm. I have a colleague who talks about amputation. And where do you amputate? How do you excise the rot? And how are you seen to do that speedily and effectively?
Hmm. So while the likes of Gibbs work on producing excellent leaders with an understanding of the context in which they're leading, there's obviously the difficulty in South Africa of low growth and unpleasant realities in terms of our socioeconomic picture, high unemployment, inequality, and so on. So you can produce these excellent leaders, but what needs to come right in the broader context that you work in or these leaders work in for their leadership skills to be more effective?
there's no doubt that it's an awful lot easier to lead in a high-growth environment than in a low-growth environment. And I think there are many CEOs and senior leaders out there who are just praying for the problems that happen in a high-growth environment. I think part of being leadership in corporate South Africa at the moment is walking multiple paths. One of those paths is that you have to think about your organization's own competitiveness and your strategy for a low-growth environment, which, yes, certainly involves aggressive cost management, but also about being really attuned to what customers need and trying to serve customers in a way that you can deliver value to them and stay close to them. So the need for careful, attuned strategy is important. But at the same time, leaders need to band together and also play a role in terms of lobbying government and lobbying across the spectrum for better policy decisions and more stable policy environments. So there's some stuff that we can control as leaders. There's also stuff that we can influence. And I think what we did see was a void of silence across South Africa's leadership. Rural Cause has certainly tried to step out and comment on it. But we need business to also make those calls. And I think they've been much better at doing that.
He's one of those no-nonsense leaders. You see what he's doing at the PIC right now. So, Nicola, just before we wrap up, I learned that you've turned down the opportunity for your deanship to be extended for another 5 years after March 2020. But why? I mean, you're still young and, you know, just talking to you, I can hear that you're buzzing with ideas. Are you done with all the admin?
No, it's less about that was a deep breath. I was chatting to somebody today and sense-making it, because sometimes leaders need to know when it's the right time for them and for the organization to exit. And I've had this incredible journey with Gibbs, playing multiple roles. And what I've loved about my career at Gibbs is that it's given me the opportunity to play across those roles. I really need a year of a learnership. Everybody talks about youth learnerships, and I think periodically in our lives, we're always exhorting people at Gibbs to step out of the performance zone and step into what we call the learning zone. Mm. But I think we also owe it to ourselves. So from a personal perspective, I have four children. My youngest child finishes matric.
Wow.
I wish her luck. She starts next week, this year. And so it's an opportune moment for me to take that sabbatical, for me to refresh in a very rapidly changing world. And we talk about future world of work, but I think it's hypocritical if leaders don't take their own time. I always deeply admired Koos Becker, who had that discipline and resourcefulness to step away from NASPAS to take that sabbatical.
Yes.
And then returned. And so for me, I need to practice what I preach. I also think that at our lives, it's sometimes easier to just carry on in that role. And it would be a deep privilege to lead Gibbs for another 5 years. But I know that if I'm going to serve myself and society best, what I'm going to do is renew, top up my skills, and reflect and take time to rethink this incredibly complex, wonderful world that we're operating in.
Wow. Well, if a whole professor and dean of a university can decide to refresh her skills, then I'm sure many of us can also decide to do the same. Pleasure talking to you, Nicola. Thank you so much. That was Nicola Klein. She's the dean of the Gordon Institute of Business Science, also known as GIBS. And what a pleasure it was talking to you.
Thank you, Nompu.